What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 211 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We have a fantastic episode for you. We are coming to you just a couple days after Season of the Splicer went live. That is right, we are recording on our normal time on a Thursday evening, actually doing it the way we're supposed to be doing it. This has been a very standard week, which is pretty great. Hopefully not going to be up until like 3 a.m. in the morning editing this or anything. But, you know, we got a lot to talk about. The season released. Some people are very happy. A large portion of the population is very upset about some things. Crucible players don't seem to be too happy right now. Transmog is live. We got to talk about that. I've obviously updated the weapon stat spreadsheet, so I have taken a first glance at all the weapons, and I've kind of narrowed in my focus on some of the stuff that I want to start giving a shot to. So we're going to talk about those, because obviously it's kind of hard to do a full weapons breakdown with only a little bit less than 2 days, I guess, of total playtime so far. So probably next week is going to be our first breakdown of the season. I'm personally hoping that we can break down the override weapons, seeing what I get through this weekend and through next week, basically. But, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. So, you know, let's get the introduction out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. And how are you doing this evening, Kit?
Doing pretty well, Mercules. I'm excited, as I hope everyone is, about a new season, new weapons to chase, a new activity to play for a couple of weeks, and then forget about it.
Get bored of and never play again, basically.
Yeah. Yep, pretty much. Got it in one there. Yeah, so I am... But I will say, I think Bungie is doing some real good stuff with the loot side of things, in terms of putting stuff out that people should want. If they don't already want it, there's some stuff here that they really should. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited to talk about that.
Yeah, definitely. There's a couple things I did very right this season. The story beats that they've given us, even just day one, with meeting Mithrax, although I believe his name is pronounced differently in the native tongue. I believe it's Mithrax, and the Fallen Babies, and setting the Fallen up where the Black Armory raid took place, or the what was even the name of that raid? Why can't I remember the name of the raid right now? Scourge of the Past.
Scourge of the Past, yeah.
Where Scourge of the Past took place. So we've got the Fallen set up in there. We moved the helm out to a whole different area. The Fallen are hanging out in the helm. Some people are pretty happy to have the Fallen around. Some people are pretty upset to have the Fallen around. So the story beats for we have to remember that this is actually not the summer season, right? Like, this is the season of the Drifter season. So this usually is the weakest of, I shouldn't say the weakest. It is one of the weakest of the four seasons, right? Usually the season that comes with the fall expansion is pretty weak. And then the winter one is good, and then the summer one is good, and the spring one is like usually one of the weaker seasons. So because of the way they delayed things, like, this is actually that weaker expansion. But I've got to say, before we, you know, get too deep into this, I actually think that some of the stuff they've done is pretty good. For a weaker expansion, we've got a ton of loot and some really, really good loot thanks to a bunch of new perks. We've got really great story beats coming out. We've got a new six-man activity, which isn't the Reckoning, basically, which that alone is like is pretty great. And, you know, we had some pretty major quality of life changes, some pretty major overhauls in terms of the way you set your Guardian up to look. So there are some really great things about the season, and there's some other things that aren't necessarily so great about the season. I'm sure we'll get to those, but probably before we dive in too deep, we should get the housekeeping out of the way. I don't think we have any podcast reviews this week. You know, if you guys want to leave a review, you're more than welcome to. We'll read it out on the podcast. But I do believe we have some Patreons to thank. Or patrons to thank.
Yeah, we absolutely do. Big shout out and thank yous, first of all, to our trio of sponsor guardians. These are guardians just like you who go above and beyond to support the podcast in a big way. And so we want to say thank you to the Shazzle, to ZinsoCal, and to a Solitary Bird. These three guardians, if you see them in the wild, are a big reason that this show, as ever, remains totally free of any sort of corporate sponsorship or product placement, aside from, you know, occasionally telling you what beer we're drinking. And we really appreciate it, as we do all of our ongoing patrons. We've got just a truly massive number of patrons right now supporting the podcast. which is just, I mean, it's sort of overwhelming to see, you know, what started as kind of a passion project on Reddit so many years ago has become something that we do week in and week out. And it's a ton of fun, and clearly it's a ton of fun for you guys as well. So on that note, a warm welcome to our newest patron, Tiller. Tiller, thank you so much for your pledge of support. We really appreciate you. And I think I've already seen you active in the Discord, so that's fantastic, and I hope we see more of you.
Tiller was indeed already active in the Discord. I believe I spoke to him how to, or her, I guess I shouldn't assume gender, but spoke to Tiller about how to get into the LFG channels for the appropriate console, or for the appropriate, I guess it wasn't console, PC platform in the Discord. So
very nice. Yeah. Well, there's our obligatory plug of the Discord as a great place to hang out and find Guardians to play with.
Which, the Discord popping off because someone asked me for a link to it on Reddit when I posted the weapon stat spreadsheet update. And so I linked it, and we got like 60 people joining from Reddit. So welcome to all the Reddit people. Don't forget to stop by and say hi and join some of the channels. I know I saw some of them in the Destiny Science channel already, so that's pretty neat.
You know, I thought I saw like a very large number of notifications going off, and I was so busy trying to cram work and Destiny into the same time slots today that I did not check it out. But that's every few months, I think Reddit seems to remember that there's a Discord for the spreadsheet, and just like a whole bunch of people jump in, which is awesome.
It's always fun. It's gotten to the point now where it's like legitimately its own full community, and there's like constantly a conversation going on. Like every time I log in, there's like four or five channels that have updates for me to look at. So definitely keeps me busy. But yeah, that's the housekeeping. Kind of get that out of the way. I would like to try to, I mean, it's, I don't know why I'm even bothering to say this. I was going to say, I would like to try to do this kind of quickly because there are some really good questions that people asked in the Discord this week. And I like really want to get to the listener questions, but I also don't really want to end up with like an hour and a half long episode. So I'm like, but at the same time, I know that there's no way that we're going to speed through this because, you know, it's a new release. We got to do the good, the bad, the ugly. And then we got to talk about what we're excited about. And then if we have some time after that, maybe we'll do the listener questions. But yeah, so I already talked about some of the stuff that I was pretty stoked about. I thought the story beats were good. I think the loot is pretty good. What are some of the things that you're real happy about with this season coming out?
So I'm on the same page there. I really am enjoying, and I've only played just like the very, very beginning of the story here, just enough to kind of get going, with the season and not really anything beyond that yet. Because I wanted to make sure I had some time to dive into Crucible and see how things were feeling there. But I really enjoyed what I played. I ended up spending a lot more time poking around the Fallen Enclave than I had intended, or even than I realized that I was doing. Trying to find all of the little
scannables.
Yeah, the scannables. Get all the little lore bits that I could, as far as, you know, what's going on here, what the Fallen are up to, what they've been up to. It was super interesting, and you know, it's funny. I've been killing Fallen for a lot of years now.
Starting to maybe feel bad about it,
and now I'm like, aw.
So someone pointed out that you know, there's like the painting on the wall, like the purple painting, that's Saint 14's head and helmet, and Saint 14 is like the boogeyman that the Fallen tell their children about to like scare their children, and we obviously know Saint as like this sweet, friendly, like beloved character who it seems like wouldn't hurt a fly, but then we remember that he caved a Fallen Kell's head in by headbutting them, and that he's like a mass murderer in the Fallen's eyes.
Yeah, it definitely takes some steps to give us the view from the other side, which is not super flattering. Although, you know, in fairness, our view of the Fallen from the other side, not super flattering to them either. So
yeah, they were invading our city, they were killing our settlers, like they were scavengers and pirates, and like I feel like we've done a fair job as Guardians of when the Fallen have not been antagonistic to us. We haven't gone out of our way to be antagonistic to them, right? Like, this whole thing started because in an adventure back in vanilla D2, there was an adventure where you could choose to not kill a fallen captain who was battling with a Hive Knight. And if you don't kill the fallen captain, he basically like salutes you and disappears, right? And shout out to my boy Vince, who was my buddy who worked at Bungie for a time, who's also the guy, you'll remember, who did Whisper, right? And who did Zero Hour. So he was the one who did that adventure. And so that started this whole thing where, you know, now the Fallen, at least one certain house, the House of Light, are our allies. Or kind of, I mean, I guess you could call them our allies. Like, they are fighting side by side. But at the same time, like, we did the same thing with Spider, too. And Spider's a dick. And, like, we worked with Spider. We didn't kill his associates. Like, we hung out with them. So, I mean, I feel like we haven't, like, just been killing Fallen indiscriminately.
That's, I mean, maybe not all of us, all of the time.
You always shoot Spider's associates when they come up, just force of habit. You're like, yeah, maybe I can just kill them this time.
Yeah, you gotta, you know, get creative, blow up the environment around them, try to take them out that way.
Maybe push them off a cliff or something like that.
Yeah, that always works, you know. Vex gods, Spider's associates, pretty much always works. Yeah, so there's, get back to the point. There's definitely a lot to like about the story that is shaping up, and there's, you know, we're just a few days in. There's so much left to discover this season, and one of the things I think that Bungie has been doing really well lately is, I mean, they're effectively, you know, just sort of stretching the story out over the season. But they're doing it in a way that I'm really enjoying and appreciating, and that makes it feel like it's sort of taking place in real time, which is a lot of fun. So I'm excited to see where this story goes. You know, it's just another weekly TV show that I check into, except that I also kill aliens while watching it, which is great.
Yeah, it was something that it almost bothered me. Like, with they did this last year with Presage and with the, you know, the weekly quest, where each week you got a little bit more of a story drip, right? And I actually really enjoyed that. Like, part of me didn't like it. The only reason I didn't like it was because I had to run Presage twice every week, right? Like, I had to run it once for the gun, and then I had to run it a second time to get the scannable, which was kind of frustrating because the scannable only unlocks once you've already completed it the first time. So right. Like, that was really the only thing that was kind of annoying. If I just had to run it once a week, I would have been okay with it. But I actually, even though I, you know, Battlegrounds was fine, right? And I enjoyed Battlegrounds on the front end of the season. I played a lot of it. And then towards the tail end of the season, I basically only played what I needed to progress the story beats and stuff like that. But it's like you said, it's like a TV show. You know, if they were to front load all of this stuff into the first week of the season, it would feel very short. And it wouldn't feel evolving. It would feel like everything happened in a week or in a day, and then nothing happened for the 12 weeks following that or the 13 weeks following that. But when they make these story drips come week by week by week, and they make little tiny minor changes to the world along with them, it actually does feel like it's part of an evolving world, and it feels like there's a lot less dead time, which I appreciate, right? As long as they don't make it like too drawn out of a process where I have to do like this horrible grindy quest every single week, right? As long as it's just like, oh, I just do a little thing that I can like log on at reset and knock it out in like the first 20 minutes or something, then it doesn't feel so bad. I kind of like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It has to feel natural, and it has to feel like it's not necessarily forcing you into doing something. It should be something that's kind of easy to engage with, I think is what I'm trying to say. And I think they've been doing a really good job of that. So I'm very excited for the rest of the season story-wise. I'm very excited to start digging into the weapons that have dropped. I've got a few items that I want to chase and give, you know, give a fair shot, especially on the Crucible side of things. I'm curious to see how they are going to pan out. And I mean, I guess that's pretty much it, right? Those are the two things that I'm pumped for this season: is more story and more guns.
How are you liking the transmog and the new appearance modification system that they've put in there?
To be honest, I have not even tried it yet. I saw that I was gonna have to jump through some hoops to get it going, and I was just like, this can wait. This is just not something I feel like doing right now. Like, I wanted to go and do the fun stuff. And when I found out that it wasn't gonna be just like that, transmog wasn't just gonna be fun stuff, that I was gonna have to work to get it going, I was just like, oh, okay, well, I'll come back to that.
So I'm gonna say I have used the transmog. I finished the transmog quest. I finished the intro quest. So I've got my six free transmogs or whatever that I can use. And then I think I can earn like another 14 more. So I will say this: the new system, not necessarily the transmog system, but that new system where you can see all of your armor pieces, how you can add shaders to them, how you can add ornaments to them, is fucking fantastic. I spent probably 2 hours last night just sitting in that system, looking at all the different armor pieces that I had unlocked, and like putting them on my character, mix and matching them, changing the shaders. Like I haven't played Dressini like that in such a long time, because I felt so limited, just by the way the system worked and how like it was what it was, but you had to put an armor piece on, put a shader on, back out, see the whole thing. Like you couldn't get this like whole overarching view. Like it was very labor intensive to like make your guardian look pretty.
Yeah.
And so I would usually do it like once a season and then like leave it the entire rest of the season unless I got a really good armor piece, and then which I would try to like redo it. Like last night I literally went through and I looked at every single piece of armor I have unlocked. Tried the different combinations, tried some different shaders, like the whole thing, and I was like, this is freaking great. And then I started to do the transmog stuff, and I gotta say, I am slightly more on board with some of the frustration with the transmog stuff now, more so than I was before I saw the implementation in game. Reason being, and I'm gonna have to see this for myself, so I'm saying this right up front that this is not from me personally. However, I did see a post on Reddit, which is a dangerous place to get information from, that said that you get one of those little, you have to collect like 150 synth weaves or something to get a bounty to unlock one of these things, right? So I've got one of the bounties myself. It's not really tremendously difficult. It's a crucible bounty. It's pretty quick to do. But the synth weaves is like you only get one every 120 seconds of game time, regardless of how many enemies you kill in between it. And because you need 150 for one bounty, then that's like 300 minutes of game time per bounty. And then because there's like 14 possible or 10 possible bounties you can get, right? That's like 3,000 minutes of game time to like get all 10, right? And basically they mapped it out, and it's like a horrendous amount of time that you have to spend to like actually get 10 bounties in game, right?
Well, that is frustrating to hear because one of the things that I liked about this implementation is that it didn't seem excessively grindy. And I'm definitely not going to be on board with a really annoying side grind that I have to be worried about.
So, I mean, the good news is that you will just get them as you play, right? Because it's not based on how many enemies you kill, there's no reason to like go farm enemies, right? Like you will just get them as you play natively, right? And just the more you play, the more you'll get them. But what it means is it's going to take 50 hours
Yeah.
of gameplay per season to get the 10 free ones that you get per season. It'll take more this time because you can actually get, I think, 14 additional free ones this season. So it'll take more. But 50 hours per season of game time. I mean, and I'm trying to think in my head, like, I'm actually questioning, like, how much time did I play last season? Like, did I play 50 hours? I feel like I had to have, right? Because 50 hours is, I might actually be talking myself off a ledge here once I start doing this math deeper. Because all I did was I saw the 50 hours and I was like, holy fuck, that's a lot of time. And I was like, that's a dick thing to do. And now I'm actually thinking about it and I'm like, hold on now, how many is, 50 hours divided by how many weeks is a season? 12 weeks?
Typically, yeah, normally it
So
would be 12 weeks.
what that really is that's only 4 hours of gameplay a week, which I easily do 4 hours of gameplay a week in Destiny. So I think what they've tried to do is they've tried to narrow it down to where like the average player is maybe gonna get like one or two of these a week, right? And like that's kind of how it's gonna work out. So I've actually now talked myself off the ledge. I am now no longer upset like I was originally. But I mean, the thing that frustrates me is that if you're going to make it like that grindy, where it's like an hours played type thing, like make it uncapped. You know, if you're going to force someone to play for four, you know, if you're going to force someone to play for 300 minutes to get one single one of these bounties, like that's just a time gate. Like that's flat out what that is, right? Like that's literally just a time gate. That's basically what's happening because now you've made it minute based instead of kill based. So it's a time gate. So if you're going to time gate stuff, then just freaking make it unlimited, right? And let these people, you know, let these people play shit tons of time and farm all their transmogs. Now, I guess they're probably scared that someone's going to set up a macro and like go stand in the thrall way and like kill thrall for 100 hours at a time, you know, and they probably didn't want to do that. But at the same time, it's like I thought what it was going to be is it was like you have to kill 150 enemies and then you get a bounty and then you can only do but one bounty. I thought it was going to be something like that. And so I was like, I kind of was thinking it was going to be a lot faster and a lot easier than it is. And now that I'm seeing that the process is actually pretty time consuming, I'm, you know, less on board with them capping it now.
Well, that makes sense, right? That's if and I have not, like I said, I haven't dove into transmog at all yet. So if that's true, if that's the way it is, then I certainly would agree that I would feel a lot more sympathy for the argument for making it uncapped. That said, it sounds like maybe something that could use some direct validation. So I'd be very curious to hear from anyone in the audience, and certainly I'll be checking this out myself in the near future. Because I am excited to dive into transmog. It just wasn't the thing I wanted to spend my early play hours on.
It's a pretty nice system. Like, it really is. Like, how easy it is, it shows you every piece of armor that you have in unlocked in a slot that can be transmogged. Not all armor can be transmogged. I think there's some like weird blue sets that for some reason can't be, but it shows you all the armor that can be. And then you basically just pick one and you just unlock it and it becomes a universal ornament, right? And you can preview every single one of them. You can see them all. What it actually kind of showed me is how many really ugly armor sets there are in D2. Like, I mean, like, here's my thing, right? Like, I think it should be unlimited, not because I am necessarily going to use an unlimited amount of transmog. I'm not. Like, what it showed me last night, like, I spent 2 hours on this system, right? I had six transmogs I could use. You know how many transmogs I used last night after 2 hours of looking at every single ornament? I used one fucking transmog. And it was on the cloak that has no back, like that white cloak that you start with that doesn't have a back, that's just the
Oh,
hood. That's the only thing I transmogged,
it's
was
the
that.
best cloak.
Yeah. And literally, I spent 2 hours looking at everything, and I was like, eh, I kind of just like this cloak. Like, I didn't find another armor set that I was like so totally in love with. So what will probably happen is like I will probably go through and I'll transmog here and I'll transmog there, right? Like I'm not the type of person who was always going to want every single piece of armor to be a universal ornament. Like that was never going to be me. But I am now more sympathetic to those people seeing how hard this grind is. Like, if you're gonna fucking time gate a grind behind 5 hours, then like just let the people grind the 5 hours. Like just let them do it. If it was only 150 kills and it was literally like, okay, 150 kills and you get one and it was super freaking easy, yeah, I understand it not being unlimited. Cause you'd have people who in 2 weeks would have maxed out and unlocked every single thing, right? And like I can see that. But yeah, so that's my thing. So I kinda slide the transmog system into like the ugly portion of the good, the bad, and the ugly, because like I actually really like it. Like the whole new aesthetic system, shaders not being consumable anymore, freaking great.
It's ironic
So
that you
nice.
would, that you would put the fashion game in the ugly section.
Well, with all the armor pieces they have that are hideously ugly, they kind of deserve it. Like some of those year one Titan sets are just like, good God, man, those shoulders. Those shoulders.
Yeah, there's a lot of shoulder going on for those
I want to see
Titans.
how fat I can make my Titan, and you can make your Titan real fat. And there's some little tiny heads that you can put on your Titan. So you can make your Titan like this super, super fat thing with a little tiny head, like a little tiny round head. It's like, oh boy.
Gosh.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, is there anything that you flat out, like, don't like about the season so far that you've seen?
I can't say that there is. I mean, you know, it's still so early, and I'm almost never really upset about anything this early in the season. It usually takes a little bit of time for something to really start getting under my skin. Honestly, the only thing that I'm really sort of tired of is people on Twitter. That's about it. That's, you know, when I saw, who was it, Tocom, I think, that commented, I was just like, look, folks, they're going to work on stasis. Like, can we just say amen and move on? Like,
you know what Twitter's
having?
They're not
unaware.
You know what Twitter's having right now? They're having a meltdown.
Oh wow! That's...
Now you get one more dad joke for the episode because I used that one. But
that's wow. We got to end the episode right here. That's real bad.
I mean, have you played Override yet? Have you gotten a chance to play a couple rounds of the matchmade activity? How do you feel about Override?
You know, I liked that it was kind of a fresh take on the moat gathering mechanic. I enjoyed getting to go and dive into the little, like, offshoot Vex worlds. I felt like that was kind of a fun little challenge. I like that there's some platforming involved. I feel like that really adds a new element that hasn't been present in any previous iteration of this type of gameplay. So, you know, at first glance, I think it's fun. I think it's an incremental improvement over previous, you know, we've had what, two or three of this sort of versions of this activity so far.
Well, I guess let's compare it to the other six mans that we've had. We've had Menagerie, which obviously it's not Menagerie, right? Like, probably nothing would be Menagerie again. Menagerie was borderline, like, the intricacy of a dungeon that was, you know, six man. So Menagerie stands alone. We've had the Sundial, which was like Menagerie Light, which I thought was pretty good. You know, I enjoyed the Sundial. We've had Vex Offensive, which was boring as fuck, right? Like, I did not enjoy Vex Offensive at all. And now we've had this one that's a six man activity. I'm gonna say that this one has three things that I think are going for it that are really strong. Number one, it's short. Like, they're pretty fucking quick. Like, they almost never take more than 15 minutes. And we've had some runs that have been down in, like, the, you know, the 12-minute range. Or maybe it's sub 12 minutes, which is pretty great for six randoms not talking to each other. And I feel like there's room for improvement, too, as people start to figure stuff out, which I like.
Yeah, I think this is gonna get probably to be an under 10-minute activity pretty consistently.
Which is fantastic, because the thing that I ended up disliking about Battlegrounds towards the end of the season, although I love the Battlegrounds activities, you couldn't speed them up. Like, they took so long that I didn't feel like the mastery mattered at all. Like, you were waiting on wave after wave after wave of enemies to spawn. Even when you cleared the waves immediately, you were waiting on the next wave. I don't really feel that way about this, which is pretty nice. Second thing that I think it has going for it is the aesthetic inside the Vex network is really, really something neat. And like you said, there's a little bit of platforming to it, which is nice, because that's not often something we see. That's another level of mastery that kind of makes you feel talented. I guess there's actually four things I would say. Third thing, the loot right now, which is great across the entire season. The loot's fantastic from this activity. Like, really, truly freaking great. To the point where I'm like already thinking about how can I start grinding for, you know, Grid Skipper and stuff like that. And the third thing, there's actually a triumph for doing flawless runs, which to me is like the type of thing that I need, because it's not really difficult at all in any stretch of the word. And so they're pretty easy for me to complete. They're extremely easy for me to complete. they're not quite as easy for me to complete flawlessly. And like that gives me a little bit of motivation to sit there and actually try and actually focus, as opposed to just like turning my mind off and getting bored. So I think those four things that it has going for it are good. Do I think it's going to last the entire season and I'm going to be playing it every single week for fun? It depends how quickly I can get the rolls of the guns that I want. Probably not. Especially, I'm assuming that there are different boss mechanics and boss fights. Like, I'm assuming that this is, you know, Europa, and that there's probably another one for another world that has a different boss or something like that, right? Like, I'm hoping that that's what it is. If that's not the case, it's going to get boring very, very fast.
But yeah, that's certainly true. But yeah, so the platforming element has me pretty excited. The first upgrade I picked up was Code Strider, specifically because I was like, oh, this is fun. Like, there are definitely, I mean, there's room in here for some platforming mastery to efficiently move through the zone. Taking down the enemies is, you know, fairly straightforward. That's sort of like that's like the, I don't know. That's like the cake itself, but the platforming for me is the icing. The icing is my favorite part of a cake. To clarify the analogy there, that's why it's the platforming.
Mm.
It's the tastiest part. Yeah. And so I really am enjoying, like, I feel like, especially if there's some variety going on, and with these perks that are giving us different options, you know, additional platforms. In the future, when we get Expunge unlocked, we'll have, you know, some gravity cannons, shortcuts and obstacles that we can take out. It seems like there's going to be a lot of opportunity to sort of try to optimize your route, and to move quickly. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And that also kind of plays into, like, you know, all the movement abilities that we have now. We have these cool movement abilities, but outside of the Crucible, there's, for the most part, not much call for them. Like, they don't ultimately matter in a lot of activities. But maybe they will here.
And maybe they will in Vaulted Glass as well, right? There's a little bit of...
Certainly.
I'll be honest, everybody's like real stoked for Vaulted Glass. I think I ran Vaulted Glass twice in D1. I certainly didn't run it when it first came out. Yeah. I ran it like year. I ran it when it was required to run it for the Moments of Triumph. So maybe I ran it at the end of year one or the end of year two. I don't remember when the first time was they did Moments of Triumph, but I did it when I had to do it for Moments of Triumph. That was the first time I did it. So I think I've probably run it three times total.
That's such a different experience. I mean, by an order of magnitude, I ran Crota's End much more than Vault of Glass. But that's because of when I started playing. I didn't start at launch. I started shortly before, now I don't remember the name of the expansion, shortly before Crota's End came out. The Dark Below. There we go. Knew it would come to me. So that was, you know, Vault of Glass, I wasn't quite ready for, but then we started running Crota's End, and then we're like, okay, well, we've kind of mastered this, so we're going to do this, and we're going to do Vault of Glass. And then that was just like a thing that I did every week for a while. We just raided. And then we ran our heroic weeklies and our nightfalls to get all of the loots.
That was the period of time where I was pretty much only playing by myself. So year one, D1, I pretty much just played by myself. Like, that was the time period where I had Icebreaker. I've talked about this before on the podcast, but I would go into the Nightfalls when the Nightfalls were hard and they would kick you to orbit if you wiped. I would go into the Nightfall solo with Icebreaker, solo my way all the way to the boss, get the boss down to like, one, you know, iota of health. And then I would go on LFG and I would invite two people who were like underleveled in. And then I would kill the boss so that they would get the Nightfall loot too. Because that was back when like it was hard to get legendaries. And the Nightfall was one of the places where you were like kind of, not guaranteed, but like, you know.
The odds were pretty good.
There was a period of time I remember posting my like one of my very first PvP guides for Destiny, and purples were so rare back then that people would use them just because they were purple.
Yeah.
Right? Like they would get a legendary gun and it would be a shit legendary gun, but they would use it just because it was a legendary. And I remember like this is like a month after launch, and I was like, you know, guys, don't use a gun just because it's legendary. Like there are better blue weapons out there. Like just use a blue weapon. And I used a blue auto rifle for like months, like all the way almost until the Dark Below. I used a blue auto rifle in PvP. And the only legendary I had that I used was a sniper rifle. And I didn't even, it wasn't even like the archetype I wanted or anything. It was literally just a sniper rifle. Didn't care about the perks. Like I didn't have a legendary sniper rifle. It could have been high impact. It could have been high zoom. It could have been anything. I was just like, I need a legendary sniper rifle. And I got one to drop from a Nightfall and I used that. So I had a blue auto rifle, a legendary sniper rifle, and like a blue rocket launcher. And like we were legitimately, and like I had an exotic two blue people. Like there was legitimately a time where like legendaries were rare, 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 rare. And now it's like they fall like candy from the sky from every activity you do.
It's such a different game now. Yeah, like I remember, you know, I got Hard Light was my first and only exotic for months. Like being able, like getting leveled up and being able to do the weekly heroic strikes to pick to get strange coins and buy stuff from Xur was like mandatory. Like I was not about to F that up. Now, sometimes there were weeks where I was busy and I would wait till Friday to see what he had before I would run them. And if he had nothing that I wanted, then I was just like, eh, okay, I can skip this week. But a lot of weeks, I mean, there were times when it was like, okay, Xur's leaving in 3 hours and I have 3 heroic strikes to do. Who wants to help me?
Yep.
Yeah, it was a strange time. I ran Hard Light in Crucible and strikes and raids just religiously because it was my only exotic. It was what I had.
That was the grind was real back in vanilla D1. Like do you remember when you had to like grind for like helium filaments or something like that?
Yes.
And you would literally run a lap for like hours. Like you just turn on some music and you just like run laps around the moon, and you would do that for like hours at a time to grind helium filaments.
I had my spots that I liked where I knew every spawn point, and I would just run the loop. And there was some superstition to it. Like I had to also make sure I picked up every chest, because if I skipped a chest, then like the stuff might not respawn. It was like I had to like sacrifice a person every day to make sure the sun rose. I don't know. Probably had nothing to do with it, but gosh darn it, I wasn't skipping.
It was just a whole different time period. I don't even know how we got. Oh, we're talking about Fiddle Glass. I was gonna say, I don't even know how we got on this
topic. You remember
at all.
Before we had Destiny Item Manager, or
yeah.
Ishtar, or any of the other apps,
where you had to go to the tower every time
God.
You wanted to change anything at all. Yeah.
Somebody showed me. I don't even remember what it was. Some other app. Somebody showed me this app, and I was just like, oh my God. Like, it revolutionized my life.
Do you remember Destiny public events or whatever? When public events didn't show up on the map?
Oh, yeah.
And some guy figured out the timing of the public events and made a little
and
app
you,
for it.
You could go and, like, vote to, like, confirm, yes, it's happening, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Oh, that was fantastic. I mean...
Yeah, and then they just put it on the map and they put that poor guy out of business. Just...
Well, you know...
It worked out better for all of us.
It was kind of silly that there was no ability to predict them. Anyway, we should talk about this season, not 6 years ago, 7 years ago.
Yeah, not 7 years ago. I mean, the long and short of it, I guess, is this, right? Like, the good, like, there's some good. It's pretty early in the season. I don't have really anything that's just, like, flat out bad so far, outside of the fact that they've done jack shit for PvP again. Right, for now, what seems like legitimately the sixth season in a row, like there's nothing for PvP. No new maps, no new game modes, no core changes. We got a new intro animation that plays, which is fucking great, except for it's broken on Xbox, and you only get 5 seconds. you're supposed to have 10 seconds. And apparently on PC, it works quite nicely. And you get all 10 seconds and you can kind of view everyone. On Xbox, you at most get 5 seconds and then it drops out, which means that I basically can't use it at all other than to see like one or two people.
I feel like it was really quick for me too. I didn't end up using it at all. I played, I don't know, maybe 7 matches this afternoon. Not once did I... I remember seeing it one time, but like most of the time when I'm loading in, I'm not paying attention. And because it's not actually on the loading screen and it's not up there for like 30 seconds that it takes me to fly in, I was just like, oh, well, I guess I don't care. So it was kind of a letdown. I thought it was going to be neat, but I feel like it's the implementation has flopped a bit.
Yeah, I saw someone posted a video of it on PC. And it was like the full 10 seconds. And I was legitimately like, what the fuck? Like, how did you do that? Like, how are you getting that long to actually look at the screen? Like, I was like, I've never had that long to look at anyone. And then so tonight when I was playing, I was checking it and I never got more than 5 seconds. It would always cut off after 5 seconds. So it was like, okay, well, it's kind of pointless, unfortunate. So that would be the one bad for me, is that the PvP experience has again suffered. The ugly for me has definitely got to be this whole nerf stasis thing that's going on right now, right? That, like, I guess what kind of triggered is, you know, a couple of things. Is one is that stasis has been the thorn in everyone's side for about 6 months now, and in PvP, me less so than others, but I acknowledge the fact that it is having a pretty overtly negative effect on the PvP ecosystem, right? So I guess the issue from my perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it started because they put in a new hunter aspect that like hardcore buffed the cold snap grenade, basically. Like, to from what I've seen, it doesn't do a ton to dusk fields really, and for glacier grenades it's actually much better from my perspective, because it makes a circular glacier instead of a line, so it's actually a lot easier to hit people with it, which is what I found.
You know, I have to feel like people are overreacting, because so people talking about cold snaps. I did notice a lot more people throwing cold snaps in the Crucible today. Throwing them, not freezing people with them, just throwing them, because cold snaps are super easy to dodge. I got frozen by one time. It was my own fault. It was not because they threw it well. And I don't know. I don't even think they killed me, actually. No, I think I escaped. So I got frozen by some other stuff and got killed. But I think I actually escaped that time. I mean, regardless, there were several cold snaps thrown at me, and only one time did I get frozen. Point being, like, let's not get worked up about cold snaps being super strong. They were a big part of their strength initially came from the fact that people were not expecting them. At this point, we're all used to Seekers chasing on the ground again. Thanks, Warlocks. And it's just, like, not that big a deal. Even the Warlock things don't get me, typically. So, I don't know. I guess I'm not super worked up about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just was kind of a tipping point for some people, that they were like, stasis is wildly overtuned. Like, why are you buffing stasis when all anyone has done is complain about it for, you know, for 6 months? Why are you now buffing stasis?
That's fair.
Which I understand that frustration. I think that the overreaction of disable stasis in PvP is probably one of the dumbest suggestions I've ever heard in my entire life. And that's really, you know, a key frustration for me right now, is that people are even seriously saying that.
Yeah, I had to exit Twitter, because it's very annoying for me when people are like, the community wants, and I'm like, hold up, slow down. Chill out. You want that, and you found a couple of other people that also want that. Let's not start talking about what the community wants. Unless you've got a much broader sample size than I'm feeling like you do. So the community wants to remove stasis from PvP only. I feel like that's a super strong statement, and I just don't think that anyone could really back it up. I think there are people who do right now think that they want that. But yeah, I would agree. It's a silly suggestion. They're not going to remove an entire sub. Or you know what? I shouldn't say they're not because
I wouldn't say that they're not because Bungie, they have done stranger things. But
Bungie occasionally takes the weirdest suggestions from the community and runs with them. And I have been wrong about what they have done a few times. But
yeah. I would be very surprised if Bungie were to disable the stasis subclass in PvP.
I think it would be a stark overreaction. Really, what they need to do is just tune it down a little further and buff the light subclasses.
Right. And even without buffing the light subclasses, like we talked about what stasis should be before we even got stasis, right? Like we talked about it and we were like, well, there's going to be issues if abilities can freeze.
Yep.
Like, if abilities can freeze, there's going to be problems. If supers are the only things that can freeze, or if it was going to do enough damage to kill you, and then it freezes you instead of killing you, then those are different things, right? Because supers are pretty much inevitable, right? Like, they are the Thanos of the Destiny universe. Like, when a super pops, for the most part, you're just, you know, if you're within its lethal range, like, you're just going to die. Like, you can sometimes outplay them, you can sometimes get lucky. But for the most part, supers in their current state are made to be just pretty OP. So a super freezing unit, that's one thing, right? But the issue came with so many abilities able to freeze you. Abilities able to freeze you. And then secondarily on top of that, they stacked slow in terms of what it does. Like wildly, wildly, wildly gave slow so many more effects than it needs to have. What it should have done is slow. And that's it. It shouldn't have suppressed. It shouldn't have made your aim worse. It should have just slowed. That's the only thing it should have done. And we talked about that before. And my opinion is that stasis does need to be tuned, right? And that if you were to make those changes where the only thing that can freeze is supers and abilities can't freeze, and slow doesn't suppress and slow doesn't make your accuracy worse, I think immediately overnight, stasis would become significantly more counterable and far, far closer to being on par with the light subclass. It's still pretty good, but not a death sentence to go against as a light subclass like it is right now.
Yeah.
You know, that being said, like I am on board with the community's frustration with stasis, despite the fact that I personally in my gameplay don't experience that same frustration because of the way I play, at least not as much as everyone else seems to, right? But I understand it, and I actually think this might be a good time to actually ask or to actually have the community questions, because I believe one of the community questions from Medic was specifically about this, and he said, is the call for PvP stasis change good for the game, or is it good for select Guardians? And I thought that was a really salient question, because I mean it's kind of both, right? Like it is absolutely good for select Guardians, particularly the calls to just entirely remove stasis. Like removing stasis from PvP is a selfish decision. It is not removing stasis from PvP is not for the good of the game overall. You know, no matter which way you slice it, like removing stasis from PvP is not going to suddenly resurrect the PvP population. You know, you might get a little bump at like the higher end stuff where those people are super frustrated with it, but it's not going to fix all the problems that exist in Destiny, right? Nerfing stasis is good for the game, right? Like having things that are wildly unbalanced that cause frustration and that basically demand that you either play them or lose, or put yourself in extreme disadvantage, that's not good for the game, for anyone. That's not good for the health of the ecosystem, for the health of the sandbox. That's not good for the game at all. So the call for PvP stasis change, you know, depending on how extreme you're swinging it, right? Like the more extreme of a change you demand, Like, the Morse pretty clearly that that change is just what you want and not what the game needs, right? It's like the Batman of balance changes, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, what does the game deserve and what does the game need? And removing stasis entirely may be what the game deserves, but it's not what the game needs. Like, that's not actually what makes the game better. Nerfing stasis down a little bit to be on par, you know, you may be super fucking frustrated with stasis, and it may be so much more fun to get on Twitter and say, remove stasis, like, get rid of it, fucking take it out of the game. I don't ever want to see it again. Maybe more fun to say that, but that would actually be horrible for Destiny. Like, that would set an awful, awful precedent if they were to do something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I would 100% agree with you. I think it's important for people to offer constructive criticism on a game. I think it's totally valid for people to vent their frustrations when they're feeling disappointed in something that they had expected to be fun. But I think there is also a point where you go beyond expressing that you're frustrated and beyond offering, you know, useful or constructive feedback, and where you're just like, you know, hanging out in a bubble, essentially, like circulating ideas with other people who are also upset and just escalating them more and more and more.
It's an anger echo chamber.
Yeah, exactly. It's an anger echo chamber. And it's one of those things where, you know, one person calls for one thing, and another person's like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And also, and then it just sort of snowballs. See what I did there?
That's your one for this episode.
I think I used it well. Until you end up calling for the removal of an entire subclass from PvP, which is just sort of like such a patently ridiculous solution to a problem that I don't even fully know how to respond to it, because I don't feel like, if that's how you feel, I'm not sure how I can bridge the gap. You know, it's like, I'm trying to think of an example. And I'm totally drawing a blank, because I'm just sort of like, why would you ever ask for this?
It's because people are frustrated. And when they're frustrated, like, they reach for what to them seems like the quickest, easiest thing that's going to make them start enjoying the game again. But this actually leads to the second question, which Cav sent to us. And he said, you know, if stasis wasn't a thing, then what's, like, if they did remove stasis, right? Like, stasis is just gone from PvP tomorrow morning. The community is going to have a honeymoon period, and then they're going to almost immediately start complaining about something else. Like, what's the next thing that they're going to complain about? And I
mean, behind the scenes, Dawnblade's still super strong, folks.
Yeah, like, they will go right back to complaining about the strongest light subclasses. Now, stasis is different, and I did say this in the Discord. Like, stasis is the fundamental shift to the Destiny sandbox that came along with stasis. The only other thing that's really comparable to it, it's not the same as, like, how the light subclasses have been overpowered, with the exception of, like, one aspect, right? Like, Spectral Blades, super broken for a short period of time, but it was just the super. Whereas with stasis, it's every aspect of the subclass that's really strong. The biggest shift I remember being this universally, like, reviled was the double primary, forced double primary in D2 year one. And, like, that's kind of what I compare stasis to. Now, could you argue that double primary was potentially better for the health of PvP? You could make that argument. I don't know that you necessarily be right, but you could make that argument, right? And that's kind of the way stasis is. Like, I have made the argument that stasis kind of toning down the movement spam and forcing players to play more deliberate is a good thing. Now, is it over the top, and is it, you know, could it do that without being as strong as it is? Yes, it could. and it probably needs to. But that's it's kind of the similar type of thing. But what are they going to complain about if stasis is just gone immediately tomorrow? You know what they're going to complain about? This fucking grenade launcher that has slide shot and can reload grenades with a slide and then immediately fire them again, which is freaking ridiculous that they put that into a game. I mean, that's, you know, that's one thing I'm going to complain about. They're going to fucking complain about the last word once people realize that this thing's fucking killing from 30 meters away with hipfire with ease, which is something we're going to talk about in a little bit, which, you know, took me by surprise earlier today when someone outdueled me when I was using a pulse rifle with it. And I was like, what the fuck is this? I tried it for myself. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a thing. So
I've moved it out of my vault.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, the guy had also done it because I inspected him after the game. He had 39 kills, and I think probably 30 of those were the last word. And he was out dueling me at 30, 35 meters with it. And I was like, what the hell is going on with this gun? I looked at it. His is 1100. So he just moved his out of collections to try it. So he'd probably gotten killed by someone using it. He gave it a shot. I'm literally dueling him with a pulse rifle, not at close range, getting killed by this freaking thing. I'm like, what the hell is this? I take it out of collections. Next game, I'm like, oh, man. Oh boy.
It's a virus.
Yeah. The community will always find something to complain about. You know, it could be the strongest light subclasses. It's going to be the strongest weapons. Bastion seems to, you know, people really seem to hate Bastion and it did not get nerfed very much. That increased pellet spread. I have noticed maybe one or two in like 10 games. I've noticed maybe one or two people that I felt like I would have killed prior to the update that I haven't killed. And it's like on the furthest end where, you know, maybe it shaved a meter off of the useful range. Probably not even that much. So, I mean, well, there's always something to complain about. If it wasn't stasis, it'd be something else. It probably just wouldn't be as unified and as extreme as stasis is.
Yeah, I think a big part of the reason for stasis getting this level of frustration is a combination of the length of time that it has been dominant and the fact that ability usage is so universal. So when most of the people in a playlist are using stasis, it's really hard to overlook it because you're going to be affected by it every single game. You know, it's like, you know, there was a time in Destiny 1 when Fellwinter's Lie and Thorn were just everywhere and you couldn't avoid them. Everyone was using them. It was incredibly annoying. And it was because they were everywhere. If they had just been good, but not everyone had been using them, it would not have been that bad. People would not have been complaining at the level that they were. And now, it's the same thing. It's a combination of frustration over time and how constant that frustration is in your experience. And so for people who play a lot of PvP, it's constant, and it's been going on for a long time. It's sort of inevitable that people are going to get worked up beyond maybe what is reasonable.
Yeah, if 60% of your deaths come from one thing, you know, you're going to start to notice. You're going to start to get frustrated. That's
even if it's just 30%, but it's 30% of your deaths come from one thing for 6 months. Like, okay.
And at this point, it's probably more than 30% for a majority of people, right? Like, you know, I
get killed by shotguns more than anything else. I'm just saying, but
I get killed by, geez, what do I get killed by the most? Actually, it would probably be primaries, but that's because of the way I'm playing. Like, I'm playing so standoffish, so to speak, that like I am more rarely letting people get into stasis range or letting people get into shotgun range for them to kill me there. Usually if I'm killed by that, it's because I was playing aggressive and put myself in that situation. I get killed by primaries like probably the majority of my deaths, but also the majority of my kills. I was looking at the numbers and like 75% of my kills in the last two seasons have been primary weapon kills. Like it is by far the most, year four has been by far the most I've ever used a primary since we've gone back to the, you know, split system where it's not forced primary usage. So I think that stasis has allowed me personally to use my primary a lot more as it has frustrated everyone else who now can't use their hyper aggressive shotgun style plan, everything like that. But
I would actually agree with that. I do feel like my primary usage has gone up over the last 6 months in terms of the percentage of kills.
Yeah, well, when people aren't aping me all the time, like, I can put away the Bastion for a little bit. And I can use a primary weapon because everybody's scared to run aggressive, which is funny. But, you know, regardless, we've got two more questions. I feel like we'll just go ahead and knock them out, and then we'll jump from the questions to the weapons we recommend. Fatal says, how does the average player that's not a content creator with a social media platform offer Bungie their feedback in a constructive fashion? My fear is that they may cave to a vocal minority and gut some things that are really cool but admittedly overtuned and fun in the game sandbox. So the best way to do that is just to play. Like, literally just play. Right? If people have to remember that content creators, despite having the biggest platforms, make up the tiniest, tiniest percentage of the game's population. Right? And yes, social media feedback is one thing that Bungie listens to, but Bungie has so many metrics besides social media feedback that they use. Right? And the best way to lend your voice to something is if, and this is just one example, right? But if, you know, on social media, you're hearing PvP is dead, Stasis has killed PvP. And what Bungie sees on their end is there has been no noticeable drop off in PvP engagement compared to this, you know, any other season at this point in time, right? Then that does not lend credence to what the people are saying on Twitter. They personally may be upset with it, and they personally may be leaving, but the community as a whole may not feel the same way, right? So the best thing that you can do is just continue to enjoy and play the game, because your usage and your hours spent on the game, those are stats that Bungie uses to balance the feedback they hear on social media.
Which I think it's important to note, Charlemagne bot posted some stats, 12-month trailing player population, and provided some additional context on Twitter as well. And the fact would seem to be that player population has not been significantly impacted by the introduction of Stasis, or at the very least, that the percentage of players who play Destiny and play PvP has not decreased. Or I guess, was it hours? I want to make sure I'm saying the right metric.
He said that what it was that the PvP population is a small population in the total game, but the reason being is because the PvE population is not falling off like it used to in old seasons. And prior to this, like, drip feed season content, right, they used to front load the seasons pretty hard. Yeah. And what would happen is the PvE players would leave towards the tail end of the season. And so PvP would become a bigger percentage of activities played, but it was about the same population. Now it's a smaller percentage of activities played because the PvE people are hanging around a lot longer. They're sticking around through the season, but the PvP population is about the same. At least that's how I interpreted what he said.
Yeah.
The
takeaway I got was that it really has not had a meaningful impact on time or population in the Crucible.
You know, I would say that Stasis is actually in the minority of things that are negatively affecting it's not in the minority. It is lower down the list of things that are negatively affecting Crucible, dramatically underneath, you know, no new playlist, no new maps, no new game modes, like no noticeable refreshes of all kinds. I mean, shit, Trials, all you ever hear is how fucking awful Trials is, and yet Trials broke records last season for highest participation on individual weeks and total season and average players per week, right? And yet all you hear about on social media is how awful Trials is. So it's like there is a disconnect between what the vocal minority of, you know, content creators are saying on social media and what is actually happening in the game. Now, there is some truth to what they're saying, right? But and this is the same thing that I felt like happened with Transmog. It's just a lot more dramatic. It's just so, so dramatic. And so if you are not a content creator, you don't have a big platform, the best thing that you can do to show that you may be okay with things is continue to play, right? Because what will trigger the warnings to go off in Bungie HQ is if the population just plummets. like just really freaking craters. Like that's when they're going to make a change. But if basically everyone is sticking around and continuing to play and they're showing like, hey, man, the people who are playing now after 18 months of not getting a single goddamn thing for PvP, like these people are probably going to stick around, because as much as all these guys are complaining on Twitter, you know, very few of them have actually left Destiny. Like there are one or two, there are one or two people who I see complain about Stasis every single day, and I see them post clips and stream every single day. So it's like, you know, and there are other people who have left. I'm not saying that there aren't people who have left because of Stasis. There absolutely 100% are. But I don't think it's as big of a population as they would like to make it seem like it is on Twitter.
Yeah, I think it's always important to just keep in mind that social media is social media. And a lot of people are over the top. The best way to get attention is to exaggerate, be hyperbolic. You know, it is what it is. So always take what you see with a grain of salt. And if it's just really getting on your nerves, then do what I do and just close it for a week.
Yeah, it's the best way to escape, or stop poking the hornet's nest that is the.
Don't do what Mercules does. He's a bad role model in this case.
Yeah, I am. I mean, I mute the threads a lot, right? So like I poke the horse nest and then, no, I like drop the grenade and then like walk away. Like, this isn't for me. This is for other people to argue about. But last question. This is from T Dot. He says, with the new Titan exotic boots, how do you feel about the idea of hard counters to certain subclasses? Is the end goal a card game with strategy for choosing team makeup? Does that even make sense for Destiny, which is so fundamentally different from games like Rainbow Six or Overwatch? And no, I mean, I don't think that is the, you know, I don't think Destiny wants to drill down that hard into a rock, paper, scissors type game like Rainbow Six and Overwatch are, where you pick a character and another person picks a character that plays strongly against that character. So your teammate picks someone that plays strongly against that. You know, it's like deck building, like, I don't know, Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh or whatever one of those other card games are. Magic, I guess, is probably a better example.
Magic, you play Magic, Gathering. So, I do.
Yeah. And I've dabbled before.
There's certainly some truth to that. In a way, there are a lot of other variables that are really important in Destiny's outcomes. It's less about necessarily always having the right cards, so to speak. So it's not always necessarily like you might have an exotic that. That rewards you if I'm playing Stasis. But if I still outplay you, I'm still going to win. If I just shoot you with my primary, tough luck, your exotic did jack for you.
And I mean, I don't think it's any more of a hard counter than something like Risk Runner is when someone else is using an arc weapon or an arc subclass that's really powerful, right? Like, we've had things like this in the game before. I think now they're just maybe willing to try a little bit more than they have in that class or in the past, but I don't think that this is a sign that they're going to begin to make this a rock, paper, scissors type shooter. I don't think that is their overall. And number one, there's just too much, right? Like, there's just too much in the sandbox to ever dream of having that be successful.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in order for that to work, things need to be much more constrained and universal, and that's just, those two words don't apply to Destiny. Nothing about Destiny is constrained or universal. So except for the ornaments. Except for the ornaments.
Ooh, oh man, low blow there. I have a feeling we're gonna have some
we'll see.
We're gonna have two things at the end of this episode. We're gonna have some people coming in here and saying, see, I told you about the transmog thing, it's shitty. And I'm gonna say that I will only concede on the if the grind is going to be this much, it should be unlimited front, right? And the second thing is, we're going to have people coming in here saying you are underestimating the effect Stasis is having on PvP. Like, it is much worse than you think it is. Like, PvP is dying because of it. And those are the two things we're going to get out of this podcast. And I will say that you are welcome to have those discussions with us either on Twitter or on or in our Discord, you are welcome to try to bring those discussions to the table. But you know, that's kind of the wonderful thing about opinions.
Yep.
I guess that leads us to the last part, which is something we promised you guys we'd do, and we saved it for the end so that you would stick around for the whole thing. But we're going to talk about kind of what weapons we are going to recommend in this new season. I'm going to say that we didn't get a ton of weapon sandbox changes. We got a lot of perk changes. We got a lot of new perks added. There's actually six, no, maybe more than that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 new perks. And then we also got two new exotic perks as well. One for Cryesthesia and one for the, spoiler alert, the Vex Mythoclast, which is coming with Vault of Glass. Don't know how you could have missed that. But yeah, I mean, geez, are there any guns you are chasing right now, extra special? And are there any old ones that you think need to be revisited with the changes, either the buffs to 450s or the buffs to hipfire, anything like that?
Well, so I can certainly say that I am pretty thrilled with this new pulse rifle. And I know that you've talked about it as well, but Grid Skipper is feeling really money right now. And I don't know if that first drop, does everyone get the same? I'm assuming it's random. I got Heating Up and Multi-Kill Clip and Ricochet Rounds, Hammerforged Rifling. Like, gun just feels stacked for a rapid-fire pulse. And I was definitely taking people down at ranges that I did not think a rapid-fire pulse could compete at.
Yeah, I really like Grid Skipper as well. I pointed out that I'd played like four games with it last night and had an 80% crit or 80% precision kill ratio, which is insane for a pulse rifle. Like really crazy. It has a ton of aim assist, 80 aim assist. I was fortunate enough to get one that rolled with Arrowhead Break. And you know how I am. It's got 55 reload or recoil direction normally. So Arrowhead Break takes it to 85. And you know that I'm normally the person who's like, anything over 75, I'm good. Rapid fire pulse rifles are one of the few exceptions because the rate of fire is so fast, they suffer really badly. I actually slapped a counterbalance mod on it, and I'm sitting at 100, and I'm really, really liking it. I took the counterbalance mod off for one game and put a targeting mod on there because I was like, oh, I'm at 85, it's probably not going to make a difference. It actually did. It wasn't a huge difference, but it was enough of a difference. And because it's already got 80 aim assist, and I'm using a pulse rifle targeting mod on my helmet, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go with the 100 recoil direction. I think that might be the only time I'll do that. But I like it.
I'm going to be totally honest with you. Mine is sitting at 55 recoil direction.
I don't even care. Yeah.
I've got a stability masterwork on there. Between that and ricochet rounds, you know, I'm sitting at 70 stability. Like, the aim assist decay has to be super low. And it felt really easy to get crits. I can see where a counterbalance mod might be worth considering. And I might actually take a look at that tomorrow. But I'm a big fan so far.
You gotta be careful if you do slap a counterbalance mod on it, because it's gonna throw it up to, well, I guess we'll throw it up to 70, right? But you're no longer gonna be at the ending in 5. So
that's a good point. 55 yeah. feels like it's working. I don't know if I want to mess with it, but
I would think if you had like chambered compensator, like you could probably, like, that might be the better option to take it to 65 or something like that. Or Arrowhead Break is obviously great because then you're at 85.
Sadly, my other option is full bore, which I'm not going to use.
Yeah, no, that's terrible. That's trash. So yeah, I mean, it is really funny. Like, I'm getting kills at much longer distances. You are very clearly not getting the optimal TTK kills at longer distances. You are definitely taking more than 3 bursts to kill people.
Because
the damage drop-off is severe. But with how easy it is to hit people, even with the bullets not doing full damage, you know, I'm still feeling like I'm using it, like, well into, you know, 25, 30 meters. Which is great. It does come with a 1 point higher base zoom than the archetype normally has. Normally the archetype is 1.7. These are 1.8, or the Grid Skipper's 1.8. I was fortunate enough to get a role that is Arrowhead Break, Ricochet Rounds, Killing Wind, and Snapshot, which is pretty great stability masterwork. I very, very badly want Tunnel Vision and Multi-Kill Clip. Tunnel Vision is one of the new perks. It gives you increased target acquisition, greatly increased target acquisition, and ADS speed for a short duration when you reload after defeating a target. And Multi-Kill Clip gives you bonus damage when you reload after killing a target. So I feel like what's better than killing someone, reloading, and getting a super lethal, really sticky gun?
I think I know part of why it's feeling so great to me right now is the new perk Heating Up.
Mm-hmm.
So final blows increase accuracy and stability while improving vertical recoil. And there were a lot of situations because it does have enough range and enough stability to really use that range where I'm killing one person and then I'm killing another person. And I mean, it just felt great. And, you know, I'm pretty happy with multi-kill clip on it. I certainly wouldn't mind just having regular old kill clip. I'm really excited as well about the tunnel vision, though, and I kind of want to try to get a hold of it on Chroma Rush, the new auto rifle. It's a rapid-fire auto, which is an archetype that I've always been fond of and has rarely been in a good position in Sandbox, but they've got some potential right now, and I don't know, that's just a super strong combination of perks, so I'm excited to give it a try.
I've gotten killed by it way more often than I would have expected to get killed by a gun in that archetype, which is usually my indication when something's pretty good. You know, in terms of other stuff, how are you liking the new sidearm, the little freezing sidearm?
I am underwhelmed. I think it's absolutely playable. The freezing just doesn't feel worth it most of the time. The duration is pretty low. Your mag is empty. The handling is surprisingly terrible for a sidearm. So it's just not something that's worked out for me. I mean, it's been fine when I just use it like a sidearm, but you know, we talked about this before the show. My biggest criticism of Cryosthesia right now is that it's not a shotgun, because that's what it, I mean, it just, if you don't get the freezing shot off, you just are hard countered by everyone with a shotgun, which is, you know, half of the PvP population.
I mean, unfortunately, it's not the strongest archetype of sidearm. It's not an adaptive like Drang. It is a precision, slower rate of fire, does a little bit more damage. I mean, it does a lot of damage. That's like 57 damage to the head, right? It does a lot of damage.
The damage is great.
Yeah,
for sure.
But as it's a sidearm, the range isn't particularly fantastic, right? And so you're in a very dangerous position to be with stasis and with shotguns. I believe that it's going to be very strong with people who spec into using it, right? Like what I found is I was pairing it with Grid Skipper, and it sucks because I would get a kill with it and I would freeze someone and then it's out of ammo. And then you have to switch to your other gun, or you have to, you know, melee them or something because you no longer have any ammo. Well, I switched to my other gun, which is a primary, so it does less damage against someone who's frozen, and they're only frozen for 1.25 seconds, so then they're unfrozen, and like, you know, it was giving me an advantage, but it was also, it was like taking me longer than if I just had Bastion, and I could have just killed them.
Right.
Like right away. That being said, I think if I was a sliding Titan that could shatter someone, that would be fantastic. If I had a shotgun, particularly a slug shotgun with extended range. I think if, you know, a grenade launcher, anything that I can basically quick swap to and do a lot of damage from close range immediately, I think it's going to pair very, very well with, to the point where it actually might be super frustrating to deal with for those particular play styles only. You know, and this is, again, this is another thing that kind of set people off, is it was like, freeze is annoying as shit. Like, why are you giving us a gun that can freeze people too? much less a primary one.
Right.
And, like, it doesn't require a reload. Like, you can kill someone and then just immediately trigger that second shot, which is a little bit of a surprise to me. Now, fortunately, the second shot doesn't have a ton of tracking, but it's a projectile, but it's pretty fast. Like, I did not really find it to be too hard to hit people with in PvP when I was using it. So, you know, my concern is that for a majority of players, it just isn't really worth it. And then for, like, one or two very specific type of players, like, we end up with a Le Monarch situation, right? Where you've, like, got those players who use Le Monarch and a quick draw hand cannon and just, like, blint the shit out of everyone, and they're basically impossible to kill. And, like, I'm kind of worried that that's what this is going to end up being, but just way more frustrating because you're frozen.
Yeah. It certainly has that potential to be incredibly annoying at close range. So we'll see how it develops as people get used to it. I'll definitely be giving it a few more tries before I kind of, you know, either put it away or lean hard into it. Other than that, I mean, I'm super pumped, actually, to have future War Cult weapons back. You know, we've got the stochastic variable, so if you like the multi-mock CCX, here's another submachine gun in the same archetype. We've got the number coming back, which I loved as an auto rifle back in the Uriel's Gift days. I really, really enjoyed the number. And so that's back now. It's a solid precision auto rifle, which is an archetype that has sort of inadvertently gotten a little bit of love, I think. And maybe in a better position now that adaptives are perhaps a little bit weaker than they were. There's a few other guns in there as well, but I feel like I'm talking a lot. So I'm going to pass it off to you. What are you excited about right now?
I mean, there's a few of them, right? Like the Hung Jury is coming back. Obviously, that's Firefly, which is a new perk, which is speeds up reload speed. And even though it's a kinetic, it detonates with solar damage, which is nice. There's also a perk in the Arc Artifact for this season that increases the damage of your Firefly explosions.
Oh, nice.
So I'll be using that. The Hung Jury, interestingly, can roll with box breathing. Sadly, not the same time as Firefly, which is a bummer. But box breathing does allow this gun to 3-tap in PvP if you activate it. So that is something to think about. It's a 0.67 second TTK. That's very, very fast. So I'm kind of looking forward to getting one of those. The Soraya's Wrath, I believe is what it is. It is the Trials SMG. It's a 600 RPM SMG, which if you guys will recall is the same thing as the Antiope or the Antiope. I don't know how you pronounce it. But what is different is that the base zoom is 1.7. And by default on SMGs, it's 1.3. So that is a huge, huge change. That is going to kick the range out pretty far by comparison. And not only that, but it can get kill clip, which is gross. It can get tunnel vision, which is gross. It can get heating up, killing wind. Like, that is going to be, that gun immediately jumps out to me with how much stronger SMGs have become on controller. I think a well-rolled Soraya's Wrath, or Shayura's Wrath, I should say, is going to be very, very strong. Really excited to try to get one of those. Might actually step foot in Trials, which I don't do all too often, to try to grab one of those. I mean, outside of that, I'm really disappointed in the Null Composure, that it was a rapid fire.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we jinxed that into existence.
I feel really bad about having made that happen, personally.
Yeah.
So I just would like to offer my sincerest condolences to everyone who was hurt by my actions. I'm very sorry.
Yeah, that took my, like, excitement for that gun from 100 to 0, like, immediately. And I'm still going to get it, obviously, but, like, I tried rapid-fire fusions after the buff. Like, I tried them. I really did. I tried some adaptives. They just freaking suck, man. Like, they're just not good. Maybe I'm not playing them right. Maybe there's someone out there who thinks that they are competitive. But I went back to my Glacioclasm, and especially after the buff, like, things just solid, man. Like, I don't think I can justify using another type of fusion rifle. And especially with null composure, for you to basically be able to activate Reservoir Burst in PvP, you have to pick up, like, 3 bricks of special ammo. You know, I guess it'd be two if you run double scavengers.
It's definitely not going to end up being, I think, a strong PvP choice. I think it maybe has some potential in PvE. Even the rapid fires do a pretty fair amount of damage in PvE. And being able to, I mean, it's not too hard to end up with a full magazine and being able to just, you know, blow stuff up, reload, blow stuff up, reload. Got potential. It's going to be really solid, I think, for clearing groups of red bars. Even worse so than a fusion rifle might otherwise be because of the explosion. So I think that's where it's going to shine. I think that maybe is where it's targeted at. It's too bad that they couldn't find a way to make it useful in a variety of different playlists.
Sure could have if they just made it a high impact. But, you know, so yeah, I guess last thing to talk about, have you used any of the 450 RPM auto rifles? I used a couple of them. I used Shadow Price. I used 7th Seraph Carbine in PvP. They're definitely pretty, I shouldn't say pretty easy to use. They feel pretty good to use. The range is quite nice. So I will say this. I would much rather use like the 7th Seraph Carbine than I would the Forward Path, which is a 600 RPM Iron Banner auto rifle at this point in time. I feel like they're more competitive in a sandbox where you've got, you know, 120 hand cannons pushing range out, 140 hand cannons, you know, now you've got a pulse rifle, a couple pulse rifles that are pretty good. Like, I feel like they're more competitive in that space. You really notice the fact that you are stuck in an engagement and that you're not airborne and that you're not peak shooting. Like, you just really notice that. Like, that's pretty much what it was. But I also have shit rolls. I do not have PvP rolls on either one of those guns. And so that definitely didn't help because I was basically like, my Shadow Press is like fourth times the charm or something, which is just not useful at all. So I'm going to grind out a couple more 450 RPM auto rifle rolls because we do have some good auto rifle perks on the artifact this season. So I want to try to build a build around them. But I think we were probably correct in our assessment that they are absolutely not going to be meta.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the case. I think they're going to be an option. And you know, I think they've been inferior for quite a long time, and I think now they're just sort of like inferior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's also going to be a bit role dependent. You know, I haven't had a chance yet to experiment there, but I do have. It's 1060 capped. I think, but I do have a werewolf with outlaw kill clip on it, so I may break that out. That's the most range you can get on a precision frame, and pretty decent stability as well, so I think that's going to be the one that'll decide for me if this is something that's worth using in the Crucible or not. I don't mind using the capped weapons in sixes. I've, you know, there's no difference at that point, so I have hung on to a few things.
All right, well, man, ended up being a long episode, closing in on almost an hour and 30 minutes here. I don't know that I'm going to break it into two parts. Probably just going to give you guys one long episode. Didn't really feel like there's a good spot to break this one up. But if you don't have anything else, then I think I'm down to call it a night.
I think this is the perfect spot to end it.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in. Hope you've been enjoying Season of the Splicer. And we'll see you next week, hopefully with the override weapons breakdown.
All right. It's a plan. Peace.
Thank you.